you wake up, Tom?
Yeah.
All right. Good morning. I'd like to call the House Education Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 6th. Let the record reflect that the time is 8 a.m. Today we have present for the Education Committee Representative Kay, Representative Protz, Representative McCormick, and Representative Himshute, and myself, Chair Ruffridge, Co-Chair Ruffridge. Looks like Representative Allard has been excused for this morning, and we do have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to remind committee members and those in the audience to please silence or turn off your cell phones. The staff assisting us today are Linda with House Records. Thank you, Linda, and Kelsey with the LIO. Since this is our first meeting of the House Education Committee, I would like to ask my colleagues if they have any brief welcomes or comments they'd like to make before we get started. Yes.
I'm good. Hadn't thought about that.
Okay. Thank you, guys. And just for the record, I'd like to reflect that Representative Ortiz is with us, as well as Representative Colom. And I don't see anyone else at the moment. We have the following items on our agenda today. We're going to have two presentations, a presentation from the Alaska State Council on the Arts, or ASCA, as well as a presentation from the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, the PTPC. We have a few people joining us, both online and present here in the room. We will just be doing the overview in the Education Committee today. And so these slide decks have both the overview as well as some of the budget items, which we will be tackling at 9 a.m. when we switch over to the Finance Subcommittee. Joining us today, we have Andrea Noble with ASCA, as well as Laura Forbes. They are both joining us on Teams. And we have Sabrina Javier here in the room with us. And then with PTPC, we have Melody Mann joining us online, as well as, again, Sabrina Javier in the room. So I guess whoever wants to, I guess we have the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and that would be, I think, Melody Mann, the Executive Director, and we are ready when you are.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
I hear you just fine.
I'm Melody Mann, the Executive Director of the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and I'm here to describe our program for you. Sabrina, are you running the I cannot see it.
Before you get any further,
the slide deck,
let you know
from here.
Story has joined us at 8:04. Thank you. And you can continue.
Sorry. I'm going to...
We are currently on slide two.
I know. I can't see it from here, and I'm going to need to pull up my copy of it. If you don't mind, I'm just going to take a brief second here to...
Not at all.
Sorry, I didn't realize I wasn't going to be able to read that from, and I did not pull up my version of it. Now, of course, I'm nervous and
it's okay. We're
trying to find it.
It's 8 a.m. and we're all still.
Thank you. I appreciate your patience with me. Sabrina, can you shoot me that again? I cannot seem to find it, the final version.
We will take a brief at ease while we get this together.
Thank you.
All right, we are back on record, and we are ready with Miss Melody Mann, and go ahead and give us that.
Thank you. I really appreciate your patience. as I was saying, I am the executive director, excuse me, of the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. The commission is supports DEED's mission, vision, and purpose by helping support educator professionalism, and my hope is that it leads to greater retention of excellent qualified educators. So are we on slide 3? So the Professional Teaching Practices Commission helps meet the priorities 4 and 5 in retaining effective educational professionals and to improve the safety and well-being of students through partnerships with families, communities, and tribes. You'll see in the organizational chart that the Professional Teaching Practices Commission sort of stands separately and independently from the rest of the programs in the Department of Education and Early Development. So the Professional Teaching Practices Commission has kind of four things it is authorized to do, to develop and enforce the code of ethics for the education profession. It was last revised in 2018. At that time, I was the chair of the commission as a classroom representative. So I come to this position having taught for 28 years in the classroom and then taking the executive director position in 2018. Just for a little background information, the Professional Teaching Practice Commission investigates allegations of violations of the Code of Ethics and breach of contract. We also sanction certified educators when there's evidence to warrant a sanction for misconduct. And then this office also conducts background checks for teacher certification and can deny certification if warranted.
Ms. Mann, we do have a question here. Go ahead,
Rob. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mann, for being with us this morning. And I just sort of wanted to make a comment and I think I understood this best when we as the Department of the Committee for Education approve, the governor appoints people to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and then we get a chance to interview those people and hear about their background in teaching and why they would help enforce these codes. So I really appreciate your many years in the classroom and you're serving right now And so it just helps me to put it into context to know that we will be approving the people who will be sitting on the commission. So I just wanted to add that comment.
Thank you, Representative Hemshire.
Good morning, Ms. Mann. It's nice to see you. I was going to wait till the end of the presentation, but I'll just ask it. This seems like a logical place on slide five to ask the question about the role of the commission in, I guess, educating educators about the code of ethics. I'm curious about how much outreach you do and if there's room for more outreach to reduce violations. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Thanks for the comment earlier as well, but my favorite part of my job, honestly, is the outreach aspect. It has been a long practice that the Professional Teaching Practices Commission works with the university system in teacher preparation programs to do presentations regarding the code of ethics for the education profession. We also work with various associations throughout the state, the Association of School Administrators and AASB, the Association of School Boards. We work with NEA Alaska often to do presentations. For example, tomorrow I am presenting a workshop at the Association, the Alaska Special Education Conference that's going on in Anchorage right now. I will be there presenting the Code of Ethics and professionalism for special education professionals tomorrow. So there's quite a network of groups that I work with. One of the benefits of the pandemic was that I have been able to be invited to school districts across the state to present to their certified staffs. I joke that I've traveled more since the pandemic without leaving my laptop. So I've been able to go to Northwest Arctic twice. I've been invited to Skagway and the Bristol Bay region to present to their certified staff members in the last 2 years. It's been very very wonderful to connect with educators across the state through so many different forums. Thank you for asking.
Thank you. Any further questions? No. All right, please continue.
Thank you. Okay. So is this the so my role with the Professional Teaching Practices Commission is to work with the 9-member commission. And the commission is a group of 5 classroom educators, 1 superintendent, 1 principal, and 1 university representative, as well as Deb Riddle, who is our DEED representative. I also organize commission meetings and work with the Department of Law and the Office of Administrative Hearings to prepare administrative hearings just for your information. For some reason, this year has been an unusual. We've had 4 requests for administrative hearings this year, and that in my tenure here as executive director, we hadn't had any hearings previous to this year. I also prepare the annual report. There are newsletters that go out occasionally. We maintain the PTBC webpage, and I answer questions, the public's questions. I provide information to the public regarding the investigation process, regarding sanctions that have that the commission has ordered. And then I like I just mentioned earlier, I present information to educators about the code of ethics. Which is my favorite part of my job. Are there any questions regarding my roles?
It looks like we do have a question from Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. And through the chair, I was just curious, you made the comment that you didn't have any, was it administrative hearings? Because I see on the next page you had 29 complaints for investigation. So I'm not sure what you were referring to when you said you hadn't had any hearings.
Through the chair, that's a great question. So the process is when a complaint comes in, we have to determine whether or not it's appropriate for our agency to open an investigation. There are some limits to what we can investigate, and that's set in regulation. And then if we do open an investigation, we determine whether or not there's evidence to warrant a sanction. And I have the authority. Can you hear my dog in the background?
No, we can't.
Okay, good. All right. I'm sorry. He's distracting me. Anyway, I'm going to pause just a moment. Sorry. Sorry about that. once there's enough evidence to warrant a sanction against an educator, I have the authority to try to settle the sanction. And I'll give you an example. The commission issues a one-year suspension of an educator's certificate for breach of contract, unless there are documented mitigating circumstances. So my role would then be to negotiate with the respondent for a settlement to accept the one-year suspension of their certificate. So that's what I do normally, which is why there would not be an administrative hearing. If the educator does not want to settle for a sanction when we believe there's evidence to warrant one, we issue an accusation, and that starts the administrative hearing process. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Brox.
Thank you. Through the chair, it says down here that you conducted 144 background checks. Is that the total number of applicants throughout the state? Do you do background check? Which group do you focus on?
Thank you. That's a great question. Through the chair, I only conduct background checks when there are records of with a criminal history. So we would not see every application that goes to teacher certification because not every applicant has a criminal history.
Okay.
Follow up.
Through the chair, about how long does it take for you to complete that background check? Give or take.
Again, through the chair, thank you. Usually it's quite quick. If the applicant has disclosed honestly what their criminal history is in the application, there is a section on our teacher certification application that asks about criminal convictions. And if they are disclosed honestly and it matches their records, normally they are approved. Things that would keep them from being approved is if the conviction was involved a crime involving children. But we, most people do not apply. I mean, I have not run across a conviction that involved children where an applicant, you know, was applying to become a teacher or an educator. Okay. So if the applicant does not disclose their criminal convictions, I usually reach out to them by email and ask for an explanation in an email so that I could put it in their record. And I explain to them if it matches the criminal history, it probably will be approved.
Okay. Representative McKay.
Sometimes it depends on how long it takes them to respond.
Thank you. Through the chair, Director Mann, this is Representative McKay. It brings another question to my mind. I thought the Department of Public Safety did background checks. And, I mean, it seems like there's different levels of background checks here going on. I mean, I could be a bank robber, I guess, and still be a teacher. Is that kind of what you said?
Well, we have the policy is we have a 5 and 10 year look back, 5 years on misdemeanors and 10 years on felony convictions. I have never run across someone whose conviction involved robbing banks. Usually the convictions are things like DUIs. The DUI is the most frequent and most common one.
Okay.
Bounced checks. I really haven't had a felony conviction of that magnitude. If I did, I would certainly confer with teacher certification, the administrative teacher certification, about the risks of approving such a applicant.
So, Director Mann, just so we're clear, you are doing these background checks, you, yourself?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, all right. And I was wondering if there's different levels here, warnings, reprimands, suspensions. Which ones of these, do they all go without pay? Where do you break from you still get paid to you don't get paid?
We do not employ educators. We only sanction their teaching certificates. So, you know, they're whether or not they are employed or stay employed or, you know, we don't have anything to do with their pay.
So I could, what's the worst one of these? A revocation?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I could be a teacher, I get a revocation, I still get paid, I'm still working?
You would not be able to work in a classroom. You would not be able to continue to be a principal or a superintendent if your certificates were revoked.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none. Director Mann, continue.
Sorry, through the chair, I just want to follow up a little bit with that. If somebody's misconduct were to result in a revocation, my experience is that they probably already lost their position with the school district. Makes sense or is helpful at all?
Yes, thank you. I think
we all right. Because we're just providing an overview, I included last year's activities that the commission participated in. We accepted 29 complaints for an investigation, they did not all result in sanctions. And so there were 14 sanctions. And I must say that, some of these investigations that were sanctioned last year were cases that were opened in previous years. For example, if there is a accusation of criminal activity, we do not investigate the criminal activity. We wait for the courts to determine whether or not someone is guilty of that criminal activity, and then we would sanction their certificate afterwards. So sometimes those court delays, especially through the pandemic, have meant that we have not sanctioned, you know, so an investigation could be open for a month, or it could be open for years. In one case, it took 6 years to wait for a conviction of an educator before we were able to revoke for life their certificate.
Okay, thank you. Is there
any other, yeah, go ahead.
Any other questions? I think that was the end of your slide deck. And before we go into budgets at 9, any other questions for Director Mann from the committee? I did just have one, Director Mann. It was kind of going off of what Representative McKay was talking about. I want to be clear for the record on the background checks. So these are not full background checks that are going through the Department of Public Safety and doing a full range of background checks for criminal history. This is something different.
So the teacher certification requires a set of fingerprints. So we get FBI and Department of Public Safety criminal histories from those fingerprints, and the applicants are required to disclose any convictions, and my job is to match those their history with their disclosures on their applications.
Okay, that's much more clear. Thank you. Any questions at all before we move on to the next presentation?
I do want to say thank you. Thank you for your patience today.
Not a problem at all. Thank you for your presentation. And we will take a brief at ease while we switch over to the next presenter. Andrea Noble, the Executive Director for the Alaska State Council on the Arts. And we are ready for your presentation when you are ready.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Roberts. For the record, I'm Andrea Noble, Executive Director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. It's an honor to be in my 17th year of service with this agency, with 7 years as Executive Director and 10 years as the Visual Arts Program Director. Prior to that, I was a curator at the Anchorage Museum and a classroom teacher for a decade. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Laura Forbes, Arts Education Program Director, Sabrina Javier, Administrative Services Director, and Chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, Benjamin Brown. And if we are on slide 13, we could advance to slide 14, the agenda. This presentation has two parts. In part one, I will introduce the Alaska State Council on the Arts' 5 strategic goals and summarize a few program highlights that relate to these goals. In part two, my colleague Laura Forbes will speak about the alignment of Alaska's challenge with the education challenge with the Alaska State Council on the Arts programs and initiatives in arts education. If there is time, we would like to show a 3-minute closed caption film created for one of the arts education programs. So when we land on that slide, perhaps we can make that determination. We can advance to slide 15, which is our organizational chart. The Alaska State Council on the Arts became a public corporation in 2017, allowing exemption from the Personnel and Procurement Acts with policies similar to those of other state public corporations. We are one of 56 state arts agencies, with one in each state and territory. The Alaska State Council on the Arts is the only state arts agency for Alaska, as well as the only state arts agency in the nation that is a public corporation. Everything we do is tied to our strategic plan, which guides agency activity. We are currently in a strategic planning year for the next five-year plan, and our strategic plan is also the basis for our partnership with the National Endowment for the Arts and our main federal fund source. The planning process takes about 8 months as we work to engage as many Alaskans as possible through surveys, focus groups, and a large group review before the final plan is adopted by the trustees at our November annual meeting. We can advance to slide 16, our mission, vision, and purpose. The Alaska Council on the Arts has an 11-member board of trustees appointed by the governor. Trustees serve 3 terms and may be reappointed without term limits. There are 5 permanent full-time staff, 1 temporary half-time, and 1 half-time contracted staff member. In addition to the shared mission of the education, the Department of Education and Early Development is our administrative partner for finance, human resources, IT, all of those operational aspects that would require more staffing if we were to try and cover these essential responsibilities in-house. Slide 17. That should be goal 1. The Alaska State Council on the Arts invests in networks of artists, organizations, and agencies in their work to serve all communities and people of Alaska. We invest in Alaska's future leaders and are inclusive of multicultural leaders to ensure that diversity, Alaska Native cultures, and principles of equitable access are integrated into all agency activities and priorities. The Alaska State Council on the Arts relies on partnerships, advisories, panels, cohorts, and networks of individuals, organizations, and agencies statewide, regionally, and nationally to ensure that our work is benefiting Alaskans. The Alaska State Council on the Arts has 15 grant programs, of which most are accessible through the GoSmart grant application portal. We've also been using Submittable as a platform that's easier for grantee applicants to use. The council awards funds to Alaskan 501c3 nonprofit organizations, schools, government agencies, Alaska Native tribes, and individual artists and mentors. The council approves all grants, and some applications are reviewed and rated by a panel of Alaskan citizens, artists, and arts patrons in advance of council final approval. All grants are evaluated in accordance with published criteria. On this slide, there's artwork featured from the Alaska Contemporary Art Bank. The Art Bank was founded in 1975 by the Alaska State Council on the Arts and created with 2 primary goals. 1, to expose more Alaskans to high-quality work by contemporary Alaska artists through the loaning of original art to public offices throughout Alaska. And 2, to invest in Alaska's creative industry through direct purchase of artists' work. Legislators are also eligible to borrow artwork, so I hope that you will. This is a great example of how an investment in living Alaska artists leverages their ability to be considered for other collections and in turn advances their careers. Slide 18. This should be goal 2. Alaska State Council on the Arts works to form partnerships and cross-sector alliances and uses the arts to advance efforts across a variety of arenas and industries. So here's a couple of examples. 6 years ago, the Alaska State Council on the Arts held a summit with national partners on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage to educate and prepare community arts and culture organizations to work with military service members, veterans, and their families who have experienced the trauma of war. That convening evolved into the Alaska State Council on the Arts, launching a series of songwriting workshops and art-making sessions in partnership with the Base Hospital's music therapist and the National Endowment for the Arts. Currently, programming led by the Anchorage Concert Association is a result of partnership with the Alaska State Council on the Arts and the pilot projects that focused on arts healing and the military. You'll probably note the license plate that's fairly popular on this slide. And the first artistic license plate competition was held 4 years ago after it became a statute in 2016. The first winner was Anita Lalanen from Palmer, Alaska. And winning the competition created a number of business opportunities for her, as well as the notoriety of a winning plate design. The next design competition is open now, and it closes March 31st. Any Alaskan can enter an original design and vote for the winner. This year, we have developed a category especially for students, and we are currently ramping up our outreach and have been invited to do an interview with KTUU, so we'll be able to share that interview with information on how to apply and how to submit a design through our Facebook and through our partner networks. Music on Hold was a partnership initiative with the Department of Administration, so that's why you see the telephone in that slide. It highlighted Alaska musicians' tracks for Hold Music, and the project was developed to highlight independent musicians and their work on a statewide level beyond their regions and communities. One of the best parts about this work is connecting communities with each other and sharing the talents and the resources around the state in arts and culture. Slide 19, please. This should be goal 3. The Alaska State.
We just had one quick question, if you don't mind, from Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, the arts plate, is that a source of revenue for the program, or is that just mostly just promotional for the artist?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, the last year we asked for a new regulation that was approved, and we are going through the process with the legal department of public comment for that regulation in order to charge a fee, a modest fee of $3, so that we can begin to generate revenue from the sales of the art plates.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, seeing none. Director Noble.
Thank you. Slide 19. The Alaska State Council on the Arts promotes the importance of paying artists for their work and provides high-level professional and business development tools for artists to help them grow their businesses and artistic practice. The Silver Hand program supports Alaska Native artists to promote their work in the marketplace and enables consumers to identify and purchase authentic Alaska Native art. The logo indicates that the artwork is created by hand in Alaska by an individual Alaska Native artist. Only original, contemporary, and traditional Alaska Native artwork, not reproductions or manufactured work, may be identified and marketed with the Silver Hand seal. The Silver Hand image is protected under Alaska trademark statute and regulation and may only be used by individuals or organizations with Alaska State Council on the Arts explicit written permission. For many years, Alaska State Council on the Arts has provided statewide community artist-based professional development workshops in partnership with local providers and arts professionals. The Alaska Native Artist Resource Workbook is the curriculum for those workshops. And that's the other picture on the slide. And it's also one of our most popular resources. Last year, the Alaska Federation of Natives distributed hundreds of copies during the convention. Slide 20, please. This should be goal 4.
Director, we do have one question from Representative Storr.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, Director Noble, and again, thank you for being with us this morning. Good to see you. Can you give me an idea of time spent on these different programs? Like, I would think the Silver Hand program might be one of the largest time spent, but I'm just guessing. I'm not sure how many new artists want to have this authentic a validation on their work. And then I think of like Music on Hold. How many people, if you live in a certain area, know if I'm an artist, I could get my music on hold if I was on hold, and I'm assuming with the state. Anyway, if you can give me an idea, that they're all different programs, but how about the amount of time on each one, or I'm assuming there's different people behind those programs too.
Through the chair, Representative Story, if I may provide a written response for your question, then I can provide information about all of our programs and a greater context as we do track our time and prioritize. There are I'd like to consult with my program officers and directors with that information, as I don't have that on hand.
Thank you.
All right, continue, please.
Are we on slide 20, goal 4?
Yes.
The Alaska State Council on the Arts strives to improve the quality of daily life in Alaska by providing opportunities for Alaskans to participate in the arts and celebrate successes. The top photo features Heather Lende from Haines, who began her tenure 2 years ago as the 17th Alaska State Writer Laureate. In 1963, under House Resolution 25, the position of state writer was officially confirmed by the legislature. Heather has worked tirelessly to connect with Alaskans through weekly radio spots, blogging, and workshops in the past 2 years. Last year, a highlight for the Alaska State Council on the Arts was when Governor Dunleavy invited Arts and Humanities Award recipients to the Anchorage office to present the awards. The purpose of this event is to celebrate the achievements of individual Alaskans who have made notable contributions to the arts and humanities for the betterment of all Alaskans. And we look forward to this year's 53rd annual awards on May 11th in Anchorage. On slide 21, you'll find goal 5. The Alaska State Council on the Arts investigates models beyond grant making to maximize agency impact to support the arts sector. Private foundation and earned revenue streams extend the impact of the state's public investment in the arts. And without both of these funding sources, we couldn't do this extensive work that has been described so far. The State Council on the Arts hosts an Arts and Culture Biennial Statewide Conference, and that's a great example of how we leverage the state's investment with non-government funding partners that are aligned with our mission and goals. The next conference is this spring, May 11th through 13th, to coincide with the Governor's Arts and Humanities Awards. And that is in Anchorage, where participants will engage in discussion, workshops, and panels to advance Alaska's creative sector. The Menarche Project logo is included on this slide, and you will learn more from my colleague Laura Forbes about how it is working in Kodiak. Menarche is an Aleutic word, which means artists. This project is an innovative way of increasing teacher retention and is made possible with foundation support and the Alaska State Council on the Arts as an intermediary. As an example of how we work through networks, the Alaska State Council on the Arts convenes the local arts agency network as one example. This is a cohort of paid and volunteer arts leaders in communities around the state. We support and serve them and work as we work to connect with resources that pertain to programming, policy, best practices, and peer networking. If we could advance to slide 22, you'll see this is a transition slide, as I would now like to invite my colleague, Laura Forbes, Arts Education Program Director, to walk through part two of this presentation, the alignment of Alaska's challenge, education challenge with the Alaska State Council on the Arts programs and initiatives in arts education. And those should be slides 23 through 27.
Welcome, Ms. Forbes. And before you leave, Director Noble, we had a question from Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, are you interfacing at all with the visitor industry, cruise ships in particular, and to promote Alaskan art?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, in our last strategic plan, that was a high point, and in the Alaska Travel and Industry Association policy, There's now a new, and it's not so new now because it's a couple of years old, an additional goal for alignment with the Alaska State Council on the Arts. So that is something that we are working on. In the past couple of years, we've been engaged in Department of Commerce and Economic Development, strategic planning. I was invited as a member to serve on that larger committee for information related to visitor and tourism and the arts and culture industry and creative sector.
Okay, thank you. I think there's a lot of room to grow in that area, and I'd be more than happy to follow up with you offline. We can't get into the weeds now at this meeting.
Through the chair, Representative Crox, I appreciate your interest, and we look forward to talking with you further.
Okay, Administrator Forbes, take us away.
Good morning, and for the record, my name is Laura Forbes, and I am the Arts Education Program Director at the Alaska State Council on the Arts, based in Anchorage. Through the chair, I have been on staff at the council since 2011, and I grew up in the community performing arts in Kenai. My role at the council is to support teaching and learning in and through the arts in Alaska schools and communities. Presenting and touring performing arts and visual art and material culture exhibition is my secondary area of program focus, and I just want to pause and make sure my volume's okay and you can hear me all right.
Sounds good on this end.
Awesome. So my role today in sharing about the work of the Alaska State Council on the Arts is to present examples of arts education programming through the council specifically aligned with the council's strategic plan, our arts education framework, which we call How Are You Creative, and the Department of Education and Early Development strategic priorities for Alaska's Education Challenge. Practically speaking, what does the impact of the Council's grant-making, strategic initiatives and partnerships, programs and services look like in Alaska's schools and communities? And if we could advance to the next slide, please. This slide offers images and a reflection from project leaders in final reporting on an artists in schools residency led by teaching artist Kim McNett at Paul Banks Elementary School in Homer, during the 2021-22 school year. The key components of an artists in schools residency are direct instruction led by a teaching artist and supported by school staff and faculty, a professional development activity for teachers in the art form, and a community engagement activity that includes the wider school community and families of students. This model offers opportunity for students to achieve in the arts and strengthen arts literacy. Most artists in schools residency goals explicitly also include integration of the arts with other curricula, including language arts, math, science, and other academic content areas, as seen here in this Nature Journaling project. Arts learning and arts integration can have a positive impact on student engagement in the classroom, which is the first step to achieving mastery in any content area. Artists in schools grantees regularly report that artists in schools residencies have positive impact on school culture and the inclusion of parents and families in education. In 2019, the Ebb and Flow survey reporting on arts education in Alaska schools notes that, quote, overall, the topic of professional development and arts integration strategies was the greatest need among Alaskan districts in the survey. 21 districts indicated that training for K-12 teachers was their greatest need. And we can go ahead and advance to the next slide, please. So the Youth Cultural Heritage Program was developed in partnership with Rasmussen Foundation and includes support for Fast Track, alumni, and project grantees. This program also includes a Youth Cultural Heritage Fellowship. I understand that we aren't able to show a video today. I can certainly share the landing page for our Youth Cultural Heritage in the future. And instead, I'll go ahead and share a little bit about what you're seeing in the image on the screen from final reporting on this project, which occurred in summer of 2022. The Sitka School District project leaders, the Sitka Youth Cultural Heritage Program leaders looked at culturally relevant education along with early exploration of media arts technologies for participating students. This project grant was awarded to Sitka School District for 2022 summer learning grades 2 through 5 and also 6 through 12 as part of their culture camp programming. And they wrote in their reporting, students strengthen their cultural knowledge and self-awareness through opportunities to deepen their Tlingit language understanding, develop their sense of stewardship about place and their role on this land. Students had opportunities to work with artists and culture bearers during the stop-motion language camp. Shelley Toon Lindberg, visiting artist, led students and staff through creating language using stop-motion films. Jamie Bradley, Sitka culture bearer, was able to support the language piece during the camp and support students' pronunciation and comprehension. Both camps we offered, the stop-motion and podcasting camp, engaged the community in cultural heritage because we were able to host a film night for the community to learn from students about what they learned during the summer camps. This deepened the citizens' understanding around cultural heritage. And in general, our grantee partners articulate their work best, and this work strongly supports the intent of Alaska's Education Challenge Priority Number 2. Next slide, please. So the Alaska State Council on the Arts relies on partnerships, advisories, panels, cohorts, and networks of individuals, organizations, and agencies statewide, regionally, and nationally to ensure that our work is forwarding best practice and supports Alaskans. The Youth Cultural Heritage Program, as you just heard a little bit about, is coordinated by a team working with the Alaska State Council on the Arts, which convenes YCH project grantees and YCH fellows for peer learning, documentation, and evaluation of their work together. The New Visions Networks includes 7 Alaska school districts and the Bristol Bay Region Career and Technical Education Consortium, which is a consortium of 4 Southwest Alaska school districts. These districts create and implement arts action plans for district advancement of curriculum and assessment, professional development, leadership, instruction, and community engagement in and through the arts and cultures. They meet regularly in network with regular communication facilitated by Dr. Annie Calkins, and the New Visions Network informs the work of arts education at the council. The Alaska Statewide Teaching Artist Roster is a program wherein teaching artists submit their credentials and vision for work within school and community educational settings via application. The applications are then reviewed by a panel of Alaska stakeholders and forwarded to the council with recommendations. The STAR roster is a resource for schools, districts, and organizations seeking to implement school and community arts education programming and projects. And then, in collaboration with the Department of Education and Early Development in 2015, the Alaska State Council on the Arts supported and participated in an initiative led by the Alaska Arts Education Consortium to convene arts education stakeholders for a review and update of the Alaska Arts Standards, which had not been updated since the 1990s. Following adoption of the updated arts standards by the Alaska State Board of Education in 2016, the stakeholder group also developed a blueprint for implementation of the standards, and this resource continues to be foundational in our work at the Council in Arts Education. Next slide, please. So the Minocta project, Andrea mentioned, is a partnership between Kodiak Island Borough School District, University of Alaska, Kodiak College, the Aleutic Museum, and the Kodiak Arts Council. You are looking at pages from the recently published 5-year report on this effort to increase teacher confidence and competence to teach in and through the arts and cultures in Kodiak. The desired outcomes of this 10-year project are, 1, more new teachers are recruited and prepared to demonstrate competence and confidence in teaching in and through arts and cultures, creating a pipeline of support. In this case, future and or pre-service teachers are engaged for impact. 2, more early career teachers are supported and retained who demonstrate competence and confidence in teaching in and through arts and cultures. This includes teachers in their first 5 years of professional practice. Number three, a sustainable and balanced collaboration across higher education, K-12, and arts partners is built, focusing on teacher development in and through arts and cultures and through partner collaboration. Evidence of new teacher participants' professional growth is collected and shared, testing the impact of the designed arts-rich teacher development strategies. And this project is directly aimed at supporting teacher recruitment and retention and on sharing our learning through this cohort model. The Alaska State Council on the Arts and our project partners are also piloting network strengthening activities, services, and smaller grants statewide with a similar focus connecting public school districts, institutes of higher education, and nonprofit arts and culture organizations in support of teachers. And for my last slide, if we could go ahead, the graphic on this slide was created for the first meeting of the Alaska Arts Education Data Project in October of 2022. This is an initiative led by the Alaska Arts Education Consortium, again with Department of Education and Early Development and the Alaska State Council on the Arts as key partners, and including arts education stakeholders statewide. The purpose of the Arts Education Data Project is to better understand access to arts education for Alaska students in schools and communities. And this graphic contemplates the ecosystem of individuals, organizations, and the agencies involved in the arts education endeavors of our state. The Alaska State Council on the Arts, and specifically our arts education programming, works always with this ecosystem in mind as we keep children and youth at the center of teaching and learning in and through arts and cultures of Alaska. A specific example of the way in which this ecosystem supports children and youth is our Alaska Poetry Out Loud program. Poetry Out Loud is a national arts education program that encourages the study of great poetry by offering free educational materials and a dynamic recitation competition for high school students, like Spelling Bee or Poetry Recitation. This program helps students master public speaking skills, build self-confidence, and learn about literary history and contemporary life. Nationally, Poetry Out Loud is a partnership of the National Endowment for the Arts, the Poetry Foundation, and the state and jurisdictional arts agencies. And the quote you see on this slide is from Ivor Daz, who was the Alaska State Poetry Out Loud champion from Anchorage's West High School in 2015. That year, Ms. Ordaz went on to win the national competition in Washington, D.C., including a $20,000 scholarship. The Alaska State Council on the Arts and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council partnered to present the program for our state. Later this week, student competitors from up to 14 high schools, from across the state will convene in Juneau, from across the state will participate in the Alaska Regional Poetry Out Loud competition online, In March, 10 state finalists will convene in Juneau to contest the 2023 Alaska State Poetry Out Loud competition, hosted in person and via broadcast by our partners at KTOO Public Media. Without the partnership of individuals, organizations, and agencies, our work on this program over the course of a school year would not be possible. And we hope that you will join us in the audience at KTOO on March 20th as partners in support of the Alaska State Poetry Out Loud students. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Administrator Forbes. And we are at our time for presentations before we switch over to the finance component. Before we do that, is there any questions for either the two presenters? Representative Prox.
Just a quick comment. Thank you. And there's a lot of opportunities in this value-added industry, if you will. And I've seen the at Sea Alaska is doing good things. I was at just bazaars, and there's just a lot of room to grow in this, and it'd be kind of fun, and I would really appreciate it if you could get in touch with me later and talk about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Prox. And I do want to encourage the members of the committee to go look at the video that was referenced that's in your slide deck. Sounded like it took about 3 minutes to watch. And if we have no other questions or anything, don't go anywhere, everyone. We're going to switch out and have the finance subcommittee meeting here in just 1 minute. So seeing no other business before us, we will adjourn the standing committee at 9:03 a.m. Thank you.